Texas. That's the ICE jail there. Reporter Sarah Stillman writes in The New Yorker, under the Trump administration, thousands of immigrant children have been detained. Many have suffered from medical neglect. If you can explain that, and then ultimately, who is responsible for providing medical care all over? Talk more about these third-party contractors.
Sure, yes. Well, as you mentioned, the Dilley Detention Center in Texas is a family detention center. That means people are being detained there with their children. This was a practice that the United States has done for many years. It went away during the last administration, and the Trump administration has brought it back. And as you said, hundreds of kids have been detained in really horrific conditions. I mean, you know, the ICE detention system overall is, as I said before, inherently inhumane, and we have seen really unconscionable conditions throughout the system that, you know, no human being should suffer through, and especially not kids. And we're seeing very similar conditions to the adult detention centers at Dilley, where kids are being detained on a regular basis with their families, you know, being denied proper medical care, you know, their education's being interrupted. I mean, there's really no amount of detention that is appropriate for a child, and yet we're seeing kids in these prolonged situations in detention, and it's really horrific. And ultimately, ICE is responsible for the health and well-being of the people in its custody, and they're utterly failing to provide that care. They are, you know, they do contract with third parties. There's a number of them that are contracted to provide medical care and other services inside of ICE detention centers, but ultimately, it's ICE's responsibility. And ICE is, you know, fails to hold their contractors accountable. Congress has failed to hold ICE accountable. So it's really just a vicious cycle that continues. And the whole time, you know, we have these private corporations profiting off of the pain and suffering of adults and children alike.
Sitara Gandhari, we want to thank you for being with us. Advocacy Director at Detention Watch Network. Coming up, caught in the crackdown as arrests at anti-ICE protests piled up, prosecutions crumbled. We'll speak to A.C. Thompson about his new investigation for ProPublica and Frontline. Stay with us. Written by the Lebanese musical composer Marcel Khalife, performed in New York by the NYC Palestinian Youth Choir. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman in San Francisco with Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. I'm in San Francisco for the national theatrical release of the documentary about Democracy Now! Called Steal This Story, Please. We're headed to California's state capital, to Sacramento, today. The film will be showing at the Tower Theater in Sacramento at 7 p.m. I'll be doing the Q&A afterwards with the film's director, Tia Lesson. And then tomorrow, The film will show at the Roxy in San Francisco. I'll be introducing it at 6. And then in Berkeley at the Rialto Elmwood. And we'll be doing a Q&A afterwards. On Thursday, we'll be in Seattle at SIFF. That's the Seattle International Film Festival on Thursday night and on Friday night. And then we're headed to Portland, Oregon, and beyond. It's continuing to play in New York at the IFC and all over the country in Los Angeles and beyond. You can go to democracynow.org to get the latest details where I will be. As we continue now to look at President Trump's immigration crackdown, we turn to an in-depth investigation into the law enforcement response to protesters. In cities across the country, from Los Angeles to Chicago to Minneapolis, residents took to the streets to oppose the militarized immigration sweeps, enforcement tactics, and violence by ICE and Border Patrol agents. The investigation by A.C. Thompson for ProPublica is headlined "Caught in the Crackdown." As arrests at anti-ICE protests piled up, prosecutions crumbled. The accompanying Frontline documentary is "Caught in the Crackdown." This is the trailer.
Immigration officials conducted several raids and arrested dozens of people.
An investigation into the Trump administration's months-long crackdown.
Are you encountering a lot of resistance?
Most I've ever seen.
The pushback.
They are creating the emergency and the crisis that we then need to deal with.
I'm asking, who's detaining me?
People live here!
And the fallout.
President Trump and I, along with others in the administration, have recognized that certain improvements could and should be made.
That was the trailer for the new ProPublica Frontline film, Caught in the Crackdown. In a minute, we'll be joined by the investigative reporter A.C. Thompson to discuss what they found when they looked into the tactics, the arrests, the legal cases, and impact of these protests. But first, another clip. This scene is from Minneapolis, shortly after Renee Good was shot and killed by ICE officer Jonathan Ross.
We were reporting in the neighborhood where Renee Good had been killed. Agents were surrounding and questioning a man.
Take your guns home! We don't want guns in our neighborhoods!
Y'all need that hardware. It's ridiculous.
People were coming out of their houses.
Get the out! You don't belong here!
Agents started to
leave.
Get
the fuck out of here! Move out! You heard them!
One protester was pepper sprayed in the face at close range. I spoke with the man they were questioning, Christian Molina. He said the officers had rammed his vehicle.
They hit my car for no reason, man. They hit me.
What happened?
They followed me for no reason. Hit my car. They looked at me and they decided to pull me over for no reason. You believe that?
That Ford SUV?
Yep.
I'm a U.S. citizen.
Suddenly.
Oh, here, careful.
Someone threw a snowball in the direction of the agents. One of them tossed a tear gas canister into the crowd. Sprayed protesters and a news photographer up close. Another fired pepper balls into the crowd. I was hit 3 times.
I got shot repeatedly with pepper balls.
There's a fucking neighborhood!
I was in the car and they threw underneath the car. Yes, I can't see.
Shame on you!
As they left, an agent shot pepper spray from his window. kicks in the face.
You need this? Here. Give me the camera. Give me the kick. Give me the
kick. Water.
I got water.
Water.
Was that spray? Well, they just spray for the movie.
In the months I've been covering this story, I'd seen the same pattern everywhere we went. Federal agents using weapons like tear gas and pepper spray against protesters and bystanders. The courts would try to rein them in, but they'd move on to the next city and do the same things. On local TV, Bovino was unapologetic.
We're here to conduct that Title VIII mission. It won't stop, despite rioters, agitators, and vast amounts of violence against federal officers. We're not going to stop.
There's also a scene from the Frontline documentary where A.C. Thompson shows the same footage from Minneapolis to former law enforcement officials. First, Christy Lopez, who spent years investigating law enforcement misconduct for the Justice Department Civil Rights Division.
I showed footage from the scene to Christy Lopez.
You're tear gassing a f-ing neighborhood! People live here!
You see just use of excessive force after use of excessive force. In no scenario is it okay to be pepper spraying people as you're leaving the scene. It's just they're mad, they're scared, you know, they're able to get away with it, so they're just using the power they have to use force against people.
Then A.C. Thompson shows the footage to Chris Magnus, a former head of Customs and Border Protection, who once oversaw Bovino. Magnus also served as a police chief in multiple cities.
Pretty awful. One of the things in policing when it comes to use of force, it's proportionality. Is the force really proportional to what you're receiving or what you're dealing with? People may well get under your skin under a lot of circumstances. You don't like it, but professionals don't react to it.
Those were clips from the new ProPublica Frontline documentary Caught in the Crackdown, now streaming for free on YouTube, PBS.org, and the PBS app. The ProPublica investigation by A.C. Thompson is headlined Caught in the Crackdown as arrests at anti-ICE protests piled up, prosecutions crumbled. When we come back, A.C. Thompson will join us from San Francisco. Stay with us.
Trời ơi em thành của anh rồi. Qua tay vài con dấu đỏ. Em là của anh. Không cần giọt máu nào rơi.
Musician Mai Khoi performing at Joe's Pub in 2020. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman in the Bay Area in Berkeley, and Juan Gonzalez is in Chicago. We've just been talking about this very important PBS investigative series called Caught in the Crackdown. It is a frontline a frontline ProPublica piece. A.C. Thompson is the investigative reporter on this. A.C., if you can just summarize, I mean, you have very dramatic footage here. You were in Minneapolis right after an ICE officer, Jonathan Ross, killed Renee Good. Talk about the protests from Chicago to Minneapolis to Los Angeles, what people were doing when they were arrested, not to mention brutalized and in some cases killed, and then how their prosecutions crumbled.
You know, it was fascinating for me to watch from June 2025 in Los Angeles to the fall in Chicago, to winter in Minneapolis, and following the immigration sweeps led by then Border Patrol Commander Greg Bovino and the rest of the immigration agencies, and looking at the protests that were erupting around the country. It was the situation where there was allegations of a massive surge in assaults on federal agents. The Department of Justice was labeling the people who were in the streets as domestic terrorists, as agitators, as extremists. They were rounding them up in large numbers, arresting people from city to city to city. And then what we would see after these arrests would happen is, as these cases moved through the court system, the allegations made against the individuals tended to fall apart under scrutiny. So we looked at 300 arrests in these various cities and found that more than a third of them had collapsed. Prosecutors had decided to dismiss them. They had refused to even file charges in the first place, or juries acquitted the defendants. And so the claims that the government was making about this massive surge in assaults, about all these people being terrorists and domestic extremists and all this sort of stuff, it just didn't match up to the reality that, one, that we were seeing on the ground as we were filming, and two, what the courts were finding as they looked at the evidence and prosecutors looked at the evidence and said, this is not going to hold up. We're dismissing this case.
And AC, you mentioned Chicago. There were you report there were 109 arrests there, but prosecutors eventually dropped 75. That's nearly three quarters of all the people that arrested. The charges just disappeared.
And that's a conservative. That's a conservative number too. I think that number is going to grow in time as we get more evidence about exactly what's happened. But yeah, the vast bulk of the arrests in Chicago have been dropped by prosecutors. And the handful of cases that are still going on are still working through the system, but there seem to be some problems with some of those as well. Experts told us, law enforcement experts, former Department of Justice, civil rights personnel said, look, this looks like a pattern and practice of bad arrest, of unjustified arrest. And that looks like what we're seeing across the country. When you have arrest after arrest that doesn't hold up, that prosecutors don't have faith in the evidence, that juries don't have faith in the evidence, that's telling you that this is sort of more than just your normal run-of-the-mill police effort. These are bad arrests.
And how do these compare to the normal rates for U.S. attorneys or federal authorities in criminal cases?
I mean, that's what stands out so much, right? Is in federal court, federal prosecutors win more than 90% of their cases. Very few are dismissed. They lose very, very few at trial. They are incredibly successful. This wave of arrests stemming from the immigration sweeps and the protests against them, they've been very unsuccessful with. They're having problems in city after city trying to do these cases. And that means, you know, that is a reflection of, in all likelihood, unjustified arrest being made by Border Patrol agents, ICE agents, other federal agents that frankly don't normally deal with protests, with crowds, with these kinds of situations that they've been thrust into over the past year.
A.C. Thompson, we want to thank you for being with us, investigative reporter with ProPublica and the PBS series Frontline. His new documentary, Caught in the Crackdown, is streaming on YouTube, PBS.org, and the PBS app. We thank you for being with us. He's talking to us from San Francisco. I'm in the Bay Area, too. We'll be at Tower Theater in Sacramento tonight at 7 for the theatrical premiere of Steal the Story, Please, about Democracy Now! I'll be doing the Q&A with the director, Tia Lesson, after the film. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We end today's show in Wisconsin, where police fired tear gas, pepper spray, and rubber-coated steel bullets at hundreds of animal rights activists Saturday as they attempted to rescue about 2,000 dogs from a facility that breeds beagles for medical experimentation. The crackdown by Dane County Sheriff's deputies left scores of people injured, including a protester who had two teeth knocked out. 25 people were arrested. Protesters were attempting to enter a property owned by Ridgeland Farms, which agreed last fall to surrender its state breeding license and stop selling dogs to other labs by July 1st as part of a deal to avoid prosecution on animal mistreatment charges. A state judge found Ridgeland Farms likely broke Wisconsin animal cruelty laws by housing beagles in brutal conditions, performing surgeries without anesthesia, and leaving wounds untreated, along with other violations. Former workers say some beagles had their vocal cords surgically cut to silence them, a process known as debarking. Ridgeland Farms still holds federal research credentials and plans to continue breeding beagles for its own experimentation. Last month, activists successfully entered the property and freed about 24 beagles who were subsequently adopted. For more, we go to Madison, Wisconsin, where we're joined by Rebecca Robinson with the Coalition to Save the Ridgeland Dogs. She's been involved in the animal protection movement for over a decade. She was one of those arrested at Saturday's action at Ridgeland Farms. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Rebecca. Can you describe exactly what happened on Saturday and why you were involved with this protest?
Yeah, so we have been trying for over a decade to get the government to do something to help the Ridgeland Beagles. And so on Saturday, nonviolent protesters attempted to rescue those beagles who were in desperate need of help. These were teachers, veterinarians, students, software engineers. These were ordinary citizens who are trying to help these Ridgeland dogs, to go in and take them to safety, get them the veterinary care that they needed. And what we were met with was overwhelming police brutality. There's no other way to describe it. People were tear gassed and pepper sprayed and pushed down, injured in horrible ways after simply trying to help the dogs.
And how many people were arrested? What were they charged with?
So there were about 25 people arrested. I was one of them. I'm still not clear on what I was charged with. I was given no paperwork. I wasn't told why I was being arrested. I wasn't read my Miranda rights. When we asked why we were being arrested, the cops just kind of shrugged. And so I'm still not clear on why I was arrested. The five who are still in custody are going to be arraigned later today.
And could you talk about the broader crackdown against animal rights advocates nationwide, particularly under the so-called Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act of 2006?
Yeah, so the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act basically protects any animal enterprise, but it does so in such an unjust way that it essentially limits our First Amendment rights to protest and to expose what's happening at these corporations. Ridgeland Farms is a multi-million dollar business, but there is no visibility into what happens there. And if we were to try and go in and take footage or try and expose what's happening there, the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act is designed to prevent that, to prevent even workers there from sharing their footage and what is going on inside of those buildings.
And why is it continuing
to Democratic Congressman Mark Pocan of Wisconsin asking Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy last week why the National Institute of Health continues to provide grants to groups that use beagles from Ridgeland Farms for experimentation.
We have something called Ridgeland Farms that's a beagle breeder for research. They've had 311 code violations, including very serious harm to the health of dogs. The head of NIH, which you can ask, I said some of the nicest things about, I really like your head of the NIH, that you have said that there's a policy about beagle testing that would not allow animals to be tortured. And that's part of what's happening with this facility. So grants are still, in the last month, going to groups that are getting beagles from Ridgeland Farms. Could you please take a look at this? Because they are under, right now, not a court order, a settlement to close down part of their breeding facility by July 1st, but they're not getting rid of the 2,000 beagles they have, and if they don't, we know what's going to happen. They're going to get euthanized, and I just want to make sure that for that commitment, which is a good commitment, not to harm the beagles, right now you're still giving money to groups through the NIH that are using beagles from this highly questionable farm.
I have a hard time. I believe you, but I have a hard time believing that. I need to look into this.
I would appreciate
and talk to the office because we're trying to end. We've done more than any other administration in history to end animal testing.
So that was Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan questioning the health secretary, Robert F. Kennedy. If you can say, Rebecca Robinson, why does Ridgeland Farms still hold federal research credentials, and why is it still operating in Wisconsin?
So the USDA is responsible at the federal level for inspecting Ridgeland Farms, and the USDA has sent the same inspector for over a decade to inspect Ridgeland Farms, and he has just been rubber stamping their operations there. His inspection reports are 2 to 3 sentences that basically say, yep, everything's great here. He's clearly got a relationship with them, and so we haven't been able to get the USDA to step up and actually take a look at what's going on inside Ridgeland Farms. And that's not just related to Ridgeland Farms. The USDA overall, the Inspector General put out a report saying that USDA inspections of puppy mills nationwide has been a problem.
And what do you expect to happen July 1 now with the deadline for Ridgeland Farms to shut down these particular projects?
So on July 1st, Ridgeland Farms will no longer be able to sell those beagles. But because of work that we've done to let their buyers know about the conditions at Ridgeland Farms, those buyers have stopped buying from Ridgeland Farms. So they have essentially a lot of beagles that they've been unable to sell. And those beagles are at risk of euthanasia. We are very concerned that those beagles are simply going to be euthanized en masse because they can't be sold and they can't be used. And so we're very concerned about the safety of those beagles. And that's why we went in to try to get those beagles to safety.
We just have 20 seconds, Rebecca. Explain what debarking is.
So the way it was conducted at Ridgeland Farms, the workers would go to the kennel and they would essentially hold the dog while another worker would reach down the dog's throat with like scissors or forceps. And then they would rip out the dog's vocal cords and throw them on the ground in these barns. This is what former employees have told us was happening there. It's a really horrific practice because the dogs are barking in distress. These are dogs living on wire flooring for their whole lives, never getting outside, never seeing sunlight. And then so when they're distressed and they are barking like that, the workers don't like it. So they devocalize them, according to the employees.
Rebecca Robinson, I want to thank you for being with us, member of the Coalition to Save the Ridgeland Dogs, arrested at the action this weekend in Wisconsin. That does it for our show. Tonight, I'll be at the Tower Theater in Sacramento for a Q&A after the screening of Steal This Story, Please. Tomorrow, Thursday, I'll be introducing the film at the Roxy in San Francisco and the Rialto Elmwood in Berkeley. Then at the Seattle International Film Festival, Uptown Cinema in Seattle. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.